All right, good to see you again. We are in Ecclesiastes 3, and we'll get into that discussion here in a second. Should I close that?
Is it kind of loud?
Yeah.
Very loud, I think. Unruly.
Dear Lord, thank you for this day. Please watch over us during this night, during the snow and hail. Help us to focus on your word and learn from it. Please keep us safe on our way home. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.
Amen. Thanks, brother. Okay, we are going to go through these questions and kind of use them as a launching point for discussion. And the first one that we see on page 15, and again, if you feel comfortable, just speak out. But he gives an example of some injustice. And it's a minor one, but it's still a good principle. Of a child that feels like he was safe on a call in a game, and there's no convincing him otherwise. That's what he thinks. And he may have been, but he had a bad call against him. And so the question is, the coach is talking to him, trying to console the player. And the coach says, yeah, I agree that it wasn't fair, but... And the question, of course, is how do you reason with a young person or somebody who feels like life is unfair, there's some injustice. And it may be legit. It may be real. But the point of that answer is that this is going to be a scene that's repeated throughout life. It doesn't end at that game, but you know as well as I do that there's always going to be moments where legitimately or even perceived something was not fair. So how do you respond to that? What does the adult say to the child? I agree that it wasn't fair, but what? What do you say about life?
But sometimes life isn't fair, and it's all about how we respond to the unfairness and how we act to it.
Yeah, it is. That life is not fair. It's not fair. You're going to have things that happen that should not have happened, but they happen. Okay, and so you have to respond. It's about how you respond. And what's the difference between reacting and responding? Reacting and responding.
Responding is a conscious choice.
Okay, all right. And generally, reacting is emotional, right? Acting without thinking. All right, so responding is you have some type of ideology behind what you're doing, okay? All right, so you're teaching the boy that life is not fair. And that's really what Solomon is describing for us here in this chapter. You're going to have ups and downs. Okay, that's what he gets into. Everything there is a season. Time for every purpose under heaven. And he just dismantles all of this stuff. Time to be born, time to die, time to plant, time to pluck what is planted. And he goes through 14 different comparisons. And what he's showing in that list is everybody goes through what? Everybody goes through what?
Seasons.
Okay, the seasons of life. We all go through seasons. And we would probably say, okay, there are times when we're on top of the mountain, and then we're down in the valley. Things favorable, unfavorable, wanted, unwanted. And that's the contrast he's making. But how should we view that as God's people? The mountains and the valleys. The times of increase, the times of loss. You know, and you just go down the list of what he goes through. time of weeping, time of laughing, mourning and dancing, embracing, not embracing, gaining, losing, keeping, throwing away. What's the healthy response for us? Okay, good. Yeah, our reliance on God shouldn't change. It's always steady. Okay. And yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. What else? What if you're in the, oh, let's just say you're in the valley right now. Something in your life that is unwanted. Okay? What can you know about the valley? What can you know about the low part
of this cycle?
Okay, that is what we can see from all of this, is it's temporary. If it's good, eventually it's going to get bad. If it's bad, it's eventually going to get good. I mean, it will eventually change. This too shall pass. You know, we looked at it. What else, though? If you're in the valley right now, there's some type of unwanted circumstance. You're in the downside of the cycle. What else can you know about that? Yeah.
But there's always something that can be appreciated.
Right. You can learn, right? There's always something to learn and something to find that you normally don't find until you're down in the dumps. You know, when you're at the bottom of the well, that's when you begin to think. How many of you ever spend time writing a list of gratitude for things you're thankful for? Do you ever do that? How often do you do that? Do you mind me asking? Are you shaking your head yes?
Yeah, daily.
Very good. How many do you try to get? Or just whatever?
Usually try 3.
Good. All right, now what does that do for you? How long have you been doing that?
I don't know. As long as that notebook is filled up.
Good, yeah.
Shifts my perspective.
Right. It really, really does. It does. I mean, when we're thankful every day, I'm telling you, that makes a big difference in our thinking. Just that exercise. Now, I shoot for 10. But, you know, sometimes I get so detailed in what I'm typing that 7's playing. But, you know, I shoot for 10. And it's repetitive. A lot of them are going to be repeated throughout the week. What does it do for you, Mary?
Shifts my perspective.
It just shifts your perspective. Good. It does that to me as well. What can it do? Let me ask you. If you're looking for things to be thankful for every day, okay, even when you're in the bottom, when you have something happening to you that you don't want, you know, time of loss, and yet you still take the time to be thankful. What do you think is going to happen? How can that help you? Or how can it help you?
You can see what's important.
Okay, good, yeah. You see what's important. True. You know, because we all have the ability, because of God, to take a step back and say, wait, this is just a vapor. This stuff ain't gonna last. You know, I'm going to eternity. So I can't lose it over this. What's this life matter? In the big picture. Sorry, yeah. It does help us remember what's important. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter what you're going through. If you take the time to stop, I do it in the morning. Get my coffee. That's number one. No. But, you know, set aside time. And I have just a file that I've created for gratitude. And I just have a Word document, and I'll have, like, January 2021 or whatever the month is. And that just works good for me. And I just keep it all together. And then there are times I shift over to a journal. Journaling basically is the same thing. But it helps you think through things. That's what that does. Journaling or gratitude, it helps you think through what you're going through.
But I can't tell you the number of times, well, man, I don't want to do this. You know, I just don't want to do this. Going through something I don't like. But when I do that, it never fails. It really helps you. So, down in the valley, okay, you can learn. That's a good learning period for you. Okay? So that's what God said. Everything, there's a purpose for everything. You know, he set up life this way. You can't be at the mountain all the time. Mountaintop. He set it up that way. It's not good for you to be at the mountaintop. Almost. You have to be in the valley to appreciate that. You know? But it's all temporary. It doesn't matter what you're going through. It will eventually shift, good or bad. And gratitude gets you through both of them. It really does. You know, you look at Daniel. Remember when that mandate was made, the decree was made that it was illegal to pray? You know, it wasn't like the slap on the hand. I mean, this was a death sentence. So what was his response?
To pray.
His first response was to go and pray. And the text says he gave thanks. He gave thanks. So it doesn't matter what you're going through. You can always find things to be thankful for. So it changes your perspective. Shows you what's important. Did you have something?
No, what you just said, I think it's about perspective.
Right. Yeah, which is what started off this whole study, is perspective. And it just helps you. It helps you respond to the situation. All right, so you're helping a child, and you're helping somebody who says life is not fair, and you're trying to show them, look, everybody has to go through this. Nobody's exempt from this. We all have highs and lows. That's the nature of life, and we have to learn to adapt to it. Okay. But obviously, like we stated, God is what leads us through. Anything else on that point before we move on?
Even valleys are the most beautiful. You go up to the top of a mountain, you look down at the valley,
wow,
and see wildflowers.
True.
And a river. So even
true,
if you think when you're going through the valley, your gratitude and what you go through are your planting flowers. So when you go up to the mountaintop, you see what's bloomed.
Very good. That's a good observation. That's true. Valleys are beautiful. They're fertile. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where you have the most growth, is in the valley. Go ahead.
Along with that point is, sometimes there's nothing you can do to change it, so you might as well look for the good.
Exactly. That's true. Situation. Yeah. Sometimes a storm is just going to stay overhead for a while. And you got to look for the good. That's right. But just keep in mind, there's no reason to end your life. You know, because people do that. People, I don't care where you are financially, there are people who think, okay, it's just no point going on to this. And there are people of all walks of life who reach that conclusion. And it's a shame.
But why is that?
Yeah, okay. That's a good question.
Why is that? Why do y'all think that is?
They can only see the bad.
The hopelessness.
That's exactly what the exact word that I had in my head was hopeless.
Yeah.
Somebody just gets to a place where they feel hopeless. No hope. Nothing's going to get better. Things are really bad. It's just going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to deal with this anymore. And that's why this whole, you know, study is about what he concludes at the end of the book. And the whole matter of life,
right,
man, is to fear God and keep his commandments.
Right.
That gives you the perspective you need to deal with everything that happens, no matter what it might be.
Right.
And chapter 3, he does say, you know, this is life. These are the seasons of life, the way things change. And what you can expect,
mm-hmm,
what will be constant,
mm-hmm,
what is going to happen. Just be prepared for that.
It is. You know, but we lose that. We lose that understanding when we're going through it. You know, we kind of feel like it is hopeless. And what's a shame is you've known of people, I've known of people who took their life, even in response to their sin, you know, the consequences, earthly consequences of sin. But now, years later, even that would have been overcome by now, you know, especially with the mercy of God, that He can make good come from anything. And that's what the next few points down is going to be about. You know, if they would have just had faith, you know, humility, faith, turning to God, it would have been better by now. It would have been better.
Well, prayer and relationships with friends that you can confide
right.
into.
That's true.
That's the other thing that I heard a number of years ago. There was an individual who was a member of the church, and he took his life. And he was someone that was well-respected, and, you know, a lot of folks just thought his life was the perfect life. And, you know, I know some folks that thought, you know, we did not have the relationship with this individual that we should have.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been in a position where he would have felt like he could have come and talked to us.
Mm-hmm.
To, first of all, turn to God, but second of all, have brothers or sisters in Christ that you can turn to.
Right.
Whatever your situation might be, where you can, you know, somebody can help you work through that to get to the other side of it.
Even consequences of sin. You
right.
know?
No, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a problem in a relationship, if it's a problem where a person is, you know, thinking about taking their own life, whatever it might be, so many times, you know, there's some sin associated with that
mm-hmm. right.
situation, whether it's
right.
just forsaking God and not turning to Him, or something that you've actually done where you've created separation between you and your relationship with God. But there's not anything you can't get over that you get on the other side of. You've got to use the resources God puts in place for you to be able to get
That's
through
true.
It and to what's next.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at Peter and Judas. I mean, technically, there was no difference between their sins. They both betrayed the Lord in their own way. I mean, sin is sin. They were both spiritually in the same boat. But Judas, you know, took his life when he could have been just as forgiven and just as much of an asset to Christianity in the aftermath of his sin. If he just had the faith, humility, turned to the Lord, turn to people, remember this too shall pass. It could have got better for him. Because the Lord will forgive, and the Lord will help us through. We'll get to that one in verse or number four. All right, anything else on this one? Good comments. Okay. He says that, well, we kind of really already talked about that one. What about number three? What is the answer? I think that's the one I'm on, yeah. What is the answer to Solomon's question in verse 9? Okay. And, of course, the question is this. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? Okay. So what's the answer to that verse? What's the answer to that question? I mean, what's the frustration? What's the question, first of all? And it's one repeated, but what's his question?
What's the point?
What's the point of it all, exactly? What's the point of it all? You know, from your struggle in life, from your pursuits in life, what is there really to gain from it all? What profit is there?
I think this kind of reflects on Solomon's main issue, because he's asking basically what am I to gain out of life?
Right.
What am I to gain out of life? And I think one of the ways I think about it is like, so say you're like reading a book, and we follow a protagonist, we have like a person point of view on this person, and everything involves them and it's affecting them. And I think we see our lives like that sometimes, but if that's the case, then everybody else is living a
first person point of view, and the most we can ever be to anybody else is a secondary character.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not what we can get out of it, it's how we can influence those around us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Good. Yeah, that's something substantive.
That's a really good point, because I think a good answer to that question would be, what's the point of gain if you're not going to use it, say, to help others?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But I think Solomon's problem was he thought too much about himself, too singularly,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't think of, I mean, of course he cast God out of his life.
Right.
But he could have thought of others.
Mm-hmm.
He could have bettered it for others.
Exactly. Yeah, because the selfish path did nothing. You know, it was definitely futile and vain. So, okay. And the idea of serving and sacrifice is something significant from life. You know, if you seek your own path, your own way, I should say, you might as well just look at the sign. It says dead end, because that's what's coming. It's a dead end road. There's nothing there. Solomon went to the very end of the road and came back and said, don't waste your time. It's not there. You know, and he went in a golden chariot down the road. And it's not there. Just trust me on this one. It's not there. So the better path is that of self-sacrifice and service, and especially outlined by God. Anything on that one?
I just thought about, where would we be if Jesus lived a life like that?
Oh, man. Wow. Wow, exactly. We wouldn't even be here right now. I mean, he literally spared life by him sacrificing himself for the Father's will. Yeah, where would we be if Jesus was like that? It's a good thought. Okay. Anything else on that one?
The only thing is, like, you know, where you ask that question, what profit has the worker from that for which he labors?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't take the attitude of, well, I'm not going to work. I'm not going to do anything, because it just really doesn't matter.
Right. Which is what the Thessalonians were thinking.
Right.
The Lord's coming back, it's going to burn up
anyway,
so why work?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So why work? I mean, well, who's going to feed you? Who's going to take care?
Right.
Are you going to become a burden to somebody else because you won't do what you need to just take care of yourself?
Right.
That's not what it's talking about.
Exactly. That's true. Right. Yeah, because in his other writings, and even in this book, he shows the benefit of labor. You know, there's nothing better than a man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of his labor. 2:24. And that's repeated a lot too. So yeah.
That's taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
If you're a man, you got a family, take care of your family.
Right.
You know, that's as individuals, taking care of yourself.
Right.
Not counting on somebody else to do it for you. Or
true.
It's not care.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the virtuous woman was like that. She sacrificed to provide for her family, you know. If you make this your only focus in life, and are there people in this world who are doing that? Only living for this life. I mean, that's exactly. That's everything. That's majority of people around us. Have this perspective, and we have had that as well. We have to resist it. Did you ever see people who have an abundance of things and they're not happy? I mean, and yet you can see people who don't have a lot and they are happy. You know, that's the type of conclusion Solomon's saying.
But you can be just as wrong and not have anything.
Right.
As you can be and have a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Because the wrong attitude with not having anything.
Right.
Exactly. Sin, like you said, sin is sin.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and it's not wrong to have nice things or want nice things. God gives us all things richly to enjoy. 1 Timothy 6 says that. So it's not wrong to have an abundance.
It's just how you use what you've been gifted.
Exactly.
And if you don't have, not to be jealous or envious or.
Right.
Why me? Why don't I? You know, whatever.
True. Yeah, because the Lord has blessed people richly in life. Well, it kind of gets into the next one. He's made everything beautiful in its time. Okay? So, Romans 8:28, which says what? You remember that?
God causes all things to work together for
those who are good. Good. Yeah, exactly. It all works together for good from God. That's exactly right. So, you compare the Romans 8:28 with the story of Job and Joseph, and discuss how God can cause good to rise above evil. Or I like to put it this way, discuss how God can cause good to come from evil.
That's one of my favorite passages in the whole Bible.
Romans 8?
Or when Joseph tells his brothers.
I'm sorry?
When Joseph tells his brothers.
Yeah.
Like, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good.
I agree. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Yeah. Yes, exactly. You know, but who in the right mind would say, okay, yeah, I want to be betrayed by my brothers, almost killed by them. I want to be sold into slavery. I want to be betrayed as a slave. I want to be thrown in prison. I want to be betrayed in prison. Nobody would sign up for that. I mean, that is a storm and a half to be taken from your family like that.
I think it can tie in well with the valley analogy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell the beauty of the valley while you're in it. You can see the tops of the hills and hope that there's a peak somewhere.
Right.
Once you're out of it, and in retrospect, you look back and see how God had his hand in it.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good observation, because that's what he said. You know, when his brothers said that to him, and you know, he said that God had sent him before to spare them as a nation, which he couldn't see at the time, no doubt. But you know, you look at everything he did, whether he was a slave or a prisoner or whatever, what was his attitude? You know, based on the story. You remember? What was his attitude when he was betrayed? When he became a servant, what did he do? How did he respond to that?
Served his master well.
Exactly. He served his master well. He distinguished himself. You know, if I'm a slave, all right, I'm going to be the most loyal, most dedicated, best slave Potiphar's ever seen. And he gained trust, you know, with that type of character. Thrown in prison, same thing. Guess how the ruler of the jailer saw him? You know, this guy's a model prisoner. So he gained trust in the prison, you know, and he was a person who won the favor of the jailer, if you will. So that character, yeah.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that, especially with the story of Joseph, that the perspective and attitude and his response plays a big role into that. That good couldn't have been done if he didn't choose to obey God and trust him and have faith that it would get better and that he could do good later on.
Exactly. Had he lost his faith, had he become rebellious and bitter, and, you know, all the selfish things we can become, he wouldn't have found those good things like that.
So the other thing, then the question they ask is, what's your valley and what's your mountain? You know, for our individual lives, what is our valley and what is the mountain? What are the times in our lives where we have learned the most by going through some of the hardest times, sometimes over which we had no control whatsoever? And then what were the high points, you know, that you could see things for what they really were once you get out of that situation?
Man, what you talking about? That is true.
Right?
Oh, man. What's going on here? Okay, yeah. Go ahead and see the next one. But that is so, so true.
Right.
So true. But you're going through that, you don't think this can't be good. But you look back, the hand of God especially, and how much better off you are that you went through that. I tell you, there was a time
when we left Owensboro, it didn't end very well at the church there. And there was a period of 4 months there that I couldn't find a church to work with. I had a young family. And I was, you know, having to do other work to get by. But I mean, I went to like, it was at least six churches, you know, Indiana, Texas, Kentucky, I think a couple in Kentucky. No. You talk about, I mean, a guy, I mean, I was done. And then
destroyed.
Right. But then the best scenario was just down the road. It was at Beaver Dam. I think it was number 7. And I was done trying out. I was just there helping out. I was like, I was just turned me over. I was depleted. And man, you talk about, that was the best situation though. Had a really good eldership, you know. Wasn't used to that. It helped our family out. We were able to stay there 12 years, raise our family in that community. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I would not have chosen that town or that church had I not gone through all that other stuff. And it was the best, you know, for our family at that time. And, you know, I just think that the Lord's hand was in that, because I really grew there. I know I couldn't have handled a church like this coming from Owensboro. I wasn't ready. You know, there was a reason why those churches said no. I wasn't ready. But now, you know, it's a lot better. But you, man, you can look back and say thank you. That it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. Thank you. Because God's hand is in all of this. You know? But it made me think of that, you know, when Jim was saying that.
Well, one other thing too, and this is another thing that we ought to all be able to think about, is when we're going along and something comes out of left field, or a difficult situation comes along and we feel like we're heading into a valley,
mm-hmm.
then we should try to be able to see it for what it is,
mm-hmm.
and try and be able to learn from it,
right.
and retain our relationship with God, be able to talk to friends if we need to, so that once we do get on the other side of it, we will have been able to have learned from it as we should.
Right.
And come out, you know, with a different perspective,
exactly.
but in a better position.
Let patience have its perfect work, you know?
Yeah.
You can't rip the seed up every day. Is it growing? You got to patiently endure to let that plant mature, you know? So, yeah, that's a good thought as well. But, I mean, how rich we are now. So blessed that things have turned out the way they have. So anyway, we've got to remember that. Okay, God can make good come from anything. Even our evil, He can make good come from that if we respond properly in humility and, you know, obedience to Him.
I think,
yeah.
just to add to that,
that's fine.
There was something I heard here a while ago. I don't remember where or from, but it was that God can make a good come from anything.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you failed in your purpose that you thought that, you know, I'm
mm-hmm.
going to make this happen,
right.
and you didn't, that doesn't mean that you've destroyed God's plan or anything,
mm-hmm.
because God made the plan and He's going to make sure it happens.
Right.
So even if there's a failure and you don't step up the way that you're supposed to or something like that, He can still make that happen. And with Joseph, you can look at him and you can say that he had every right to just throw it all away and
mm-hmm.
rot in prison or
mm-hmm.
something
right.
like that, but
yeah.
he didn't.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I mean, he had his brothers there kneeling before him. He could have just, and nobody would have,
yeah, he had the right attitude all along, that right response, and a man of God, man of faith, and God blessed him for it. Job, same thing. You know, we all would love the end of the story of Job, you know, even the beginning of the story. Nobody wants to do the stuff in between, you know, but it's the stuff in between that, you know, that brings out the ending to that story. So.
And even the stuff in between, you're gaining things as far as knowledge on how to help somebody that's going to be going through the same thing.
For real.
Like, why does God put these in the Bible? Because somebody's going to go through something similar. And they're there for a reason, for them to learn from it and from them to see the knowledge from it.
I mean, for real. How many people have looked at Job and endured because of him, you know, over the years? I mean, at the end of all that, do you think there was anything Job could experience to where he went, forget this, I'm leaving God? You know, he went through all that, and he had the right response. And it's blessed him and other people as a result. Let me jump to number six here. What had the author observed in verse 16 that left him cynical? What left him cynical?
But there's always wickedness no matter where you go.
Okay, right. There's always wickedness, even in where? What places?
Justice.
Yeah, places of where there's supposed to be justice. You know, where there's supposed to be a righteous response to evil. You're going to have injustice there. So the courts even, you know, are not always fair. Government's not always fair. Now, obviously, we're very blessed in this nation, you know, for the most part. But, I mean, there are some real dictators in this world, and there have been. And what are you going to do? I mean, that's what he's saying. That there are places where there and it's, I'm not saying it's perfect here. There is injustice here, even in our legal system. But what's his point? You know, what's his point from all of that? You know, you go back to that first scenario of the little boy, you know, things aren't fair. And you're telling him, look, that's this world. This world is not always fair. But what? But what?
God will prevail.
There it is. God. God will prevail. How many times have you heard the Bible say, vengeance is the Lord's, I will repay, you know. Don't return evil for evil, I will repay, says the Lord. You know, people get away from it, get away with it here, for the most part, but not, you know, not always. But everybody has to answer to God. And that's what he says in verse 17. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. For there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. Now, God does judge evil even in this world. And so we have to trust him, you know. Maybe he will take care of it while we're here. But if not, nobody gets away with it. Nobody does. You remember when Jesus was threatened? He didn't threaten in return. When he was, you know, spat upon, humiliated, he didn't return evil for evil. Do you know why he did that, according to Peter? Why he did not return evil for evil? In 1 Peter 2, it says he committed himself to him who judges righteously. So he was able to get through all that knowing, okay, all right, yeah, you got the upper hand right now, but eventually my Father's going to take care of this. Eventually God's going to answer. So even he did it, you know, and that's kind of what Solomon's looking at here in this text. And that's healthy. That's a good, healthy response to the evil in this world. Doesn't mean we don't try, you know, to try and reverse ungodly policies, but it's not going to be a utopia here. You're going to have injustice in this world. All right? And it's always going to be that way. Okay? Anything else on that point? Okay. The next one, he said, how do we know that the breath of man ascends upward? For what happens to the sons of men also happens to the animals. All go to one place. All return to the dust. Who knows the spirit, in verse 21, of the sons of men which goes upward and the spirit of the animal which goes down to the earth. So the question is, how do we know that the breath of man ascends upward?
We're the only ones that have souls.
Okay.
Animals don't have souls.
Okay, right. Animals don't have souls. That's true. I mean, we're made in the image of God.
So God promises us that that's the case.
Right. Yeah, he does. He promises that there's more beyond this life. I mean, we are definitely at an advantage that he wasn't, you know, because we're on the other side of the cross and the empty tomb, you know, so we know that there's life beyond this life. But what about this one? In what sense are we like animals in this context?
We both die.
Exactly. We both die. You know, some people will go to that text and say, well, hey, look, I can't be controlled. I'm like an animal. We're like animals. We're going to do stupid things. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that you and that animal are no different in that you're borrowing your breath. You're going to breathe your last one day. Now you're going to go upward. He's going to go downward. There is no eternal soul in an animal, which would be devastating for some people to hear that the animal doesn't have a soul, but does it? I mean, it's here to serve mankind. Okay? All right, but he mentions that here in chapter 3. Anything else on that one? Okay, and then he ends our questions with, what is your unjust disadvantage? You have one, everyone does, he says. Bad health, struggling marriage, prodigal children, job demands, loneliness. What choices do you have regarding your attitude toward it? What choices do you have? A bad job or a bad coworker, difficult person to be around at school, difficult family member. What choices do you have in that?
Being different.
Okay, being different.
You can be faced with different issues or different problems, but someone can see that you are different just by how you handle the situation.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Jesus taps into that, you know. Anyone can love those who love them in return, but the real special person is the person who blesses those who curse him. That's what we'll be like our Father.
Really, you don't have many choices. You either rise above it or you stay below.
True. Rise above it or go low, right? Stay low, is that what you said?
Stay below.
Stay below. So, right. I mean, there is a noble path, and we can take it. We can take it. We're capable of it. You know, what was Paul's decision regarding his personal difficulties?
When he was at his weakest, he was at his strongest.
Exactly. Now, what in the world does that mean? I'm sorry. You were just answering that question.
While I'm here.
But no, he had this thorn in the flesh, you know. He prayed for it to be removed. God said, my grace is sufficient, which means what?
Deal with it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm giving you, you have enough to get through this. You know, my grace is sufficient. The fellowship, the forgiveness, the promise that he had as a Christian. That's all you need to get through this storm. And so, okay, couldn't get it removed. And so he realized, okay, wait now. This has actually turned out for my well-being. I'm actually better by having this thorn in the flesh. And so when I'm weak, then I'm strong. And how did that thorn make him weak? Because I'm this mighty apostle, right? People can take aprons from my body and heal the sick. But then he had this